We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Paint the walls, paint the halls. We can help you do it all.
Hi folks, it's Joe Giacalone, owner of Arch Painting. Whether you're a facilities manager at a school or hospital, or a building manager with multiple locations, when it comes to painting your properties, you need people you can trust. For over 20 years, the pros at Arch Painting have painted for some of the most respected corporations, institutions, and property managers in New England. We work around your busy schedule, nights, weekends, holidays, whatever it takes. Arch Painting is here to get the job done right and on time. Our experienced project managers oversee all jobs from start to finish, making sure every project is done with extreme pride. With offices from Manchester, New Hampshire to Providence, Rhode Island, we service all of New England. For a free estimate, call us today at 1-844-
We're shaped by our environment.
They're winning too much in Boston now. It's gone to their heads.
In Boston, we expect more. We've been here before.
The clock shows zeros. Rask is helmetless.
Greg, what was your assessment of the Krug hit?
I did not see it.
Just glad I got a haircut.
Dale Arnold.
Tuukka Rask had kind of a rocking chair game.
Rich Keefe.
So I would challenge anybody here at WEEI to a beer chugging challenge.
Dale and Keefe.
I was actually born now in Massachusetts.
You're not a Maine guy?
I was born in
Massachusetts. I thought you were a Maine guy.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
It's fairly obvious if you listen to the radio station, we don't have a lot of friends in the building.
No.
But we have a guest in the studio that has suddenly just brought people flocking from all corners.
We have
corners.
A lot of people here now. All of a sudden, a lot of people like us. Yes.
Yeah, they didn't like us before. No, they won't like us later.
Nope. But right now, we're very popular.
But at this exact moment, all of a sudden, it's, hey, Dale, just thought I'd stop by the studio for the first time in ever.
Ever. Yeah, we're here every day, 10 to 2.
Well, you should stop on by if you want, except today. So the Stanley Cup is in the house.
Yes, it is. Three wins away, Dale. Three wins away, and it'll be here for a while.
One down, three to go after a rather impressive 4-2 victory last night. We thought going into this series that the 10 days off of the Bruins were obviously going to cause some rust issues. I worried about Tuukka Rask. That was, as it turned out, not much of an issue. Bruins certainly looked rusty in the first period, but after you got the first period out of the way, not so rusty.
Being down only 1-0, I thought they had to feel pretty good. It was one of those weird times where maybe both teams felt pretty good because the Blues are on the road and they had a lead after 20 minutes, but the Bruins kind of withstood, I thought, some, you know, tired legs or just, not tired legs, but just they hadn't played in such a long time. And so they were just trying to get their rhythm back. And so you figured once they were able to, you know, withstand that first surge by the Blues, they had the crowd behind them. They were going to be able to get things going. Now, St. Louis scores early in the second period. You're like, all right, 2-0. 2-0 is a little
although
bit trickier.
This team, look, not a lot of teams come back in a final game down 2-0. It hasn't happened in like 5 or 6 years. But this team all season long has
been
very resilient.
And it was so early in the second. And then their response, as soon as they scored and it was 2-1, I felt
Connor
so much
Gordon
more confident.
Connor Gordon Clifton.
That's the man. What do they call him? Cliffy Hockey or whatever it
I
is?
Don't
or
know.
The Quinnipiac. And he just goes, he's like a forward. It's like having a fourth forward on the ice. The guy is everywhere. So he's been fun to watch. But that was just such a momentum swing when they were able to get on the board that you felt so much better about it. Like, all right, here they are. Now this is the team that we were used to.
Bruins special teams looked a little rusty as well. And again, I think the layoff probably hurt them a little bit there. But the one power play goal they did score, and it was the Charlie McAvoy goal that tied things up, came at like 12:47 of the period. Just before McAvoy scored, St. Louis had a bit of a dump to the net. Shot on goal, shorthanded shot on goal. They did not have another shot for the final 8 minutes of the second period and the first 4 minutes of the third period. They went 12 straight minutes without a single shot on goal, and the Bruins were like dominating.
Yeah, hard to tell if the rest really affected Tuca or not, because he was barely tested.
Oh, he said that.
20 shots total in the game, and they had like a little bit of a light flurry at the end of the game, where they put like 4 shots up in the final, like a couple of minutes or so.
Right.
Because I was looking at it, and it was about midway through or late third period, the Blues had about 15, 16 shots. And you're like, what on earth? Like, they just, and I know the broadcasters were talking about how the Bruins at times were getting a little cute, and they were overpassing. But they at least put up, what, 37 shots or whatever it was in total. The Blues, I mean, credit the defense of the Bruins. They were just pretty smothering last night. But St. Louis could get nothing going in that end. So, and, you know, you look at the 2 goals that Tuca allowed. Certainly the second one, that's not his fault. I mean, no. David Pastrnak, I don't know who he's passing the puck to there.
Just an awful
that
giveaway.
That was terrible. You're like, all right, here we go. Like, that is... Are we going back to, you know, Pastrnak from earlier in the playoffs where he just seemed kind of out of it, or what was going to happen? Now, thankfully, it didn't snowball from there. They were able to bounce back from that. But that was one of the 2 goals Tuca allowed, and he really had a night where he didn't see the puck very much.
Pretty easy day all the way around for him.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing, and from the St. Louis Blues perspective, I'd be a little nervous. The Bruins' top line really didn't do much last night. They had the empty net goal by Marchand, but for the most part, didn't really do much, and yet the Bruins kind of dominated possession.
Well, there was a time where Pastrnak, Marchand, and Bergeron were all a -2. You could call it a -6
right.
Before the empty net goal,
yep.
And they were up by 1. So think about that. You have your 3 best forwards and, you know, 3 guys that were all 30-goal scorers. You have a 100-point guy on there, and you are winning a Stanley Cup final game, and they've been your worst line. That's brutal. And this goes back to, was it Rod Brind'Amour, what he was saying in the Carolina series when they got off to a little bit of a slow start. He said the same thing. Like, man, if we're going to lose, we want those guys to beat you, because you know it's only a matter of time until they wake up. So if in game 2, you could see them showing up and having three or 4 points each.
It's been a hot topic of conversation since it happened last night. Pierre LeBrun, who I think is a very good hockey reporter, he was the first tweet I saw about it. We were sitting there watching the game together, me and Billy and Barry and Jack and Brick, and it was the Tory Krug hit. He gets mugged at one end of the ice by David Perron. Helmet gets ripped off.
He's like ripping his face off. What was that?
He went charging down to the other end, helmetless. You
can
see
the best part.
What he really wanted to do was go after Perron, and to his credit, he kind of veered off and veered to the right.
No.
And a lot of hockey media, and as I said, Pierre LeBrun was the first I saw that said this, said, that's got to be a charge, isn't it? I don't think so.
Why would it be?
The distance that he skated before the hit is not the question here.
Which was the whole length of the ice.
The entire.
He built up some speed.
The question here is, he was gliding. And he was gliding for 3 or 4 strides before the collision.
And Thomas just had the puck, too. It wasn't like it was on the other end of the ice or anything like that.
Unfortunately for him, the opposite, you know, the direction towards Krug.
That was like, you remember Terry Tate, the office linebacker in those commercials?
Like that.
Come out of nowhere and like not even, because I was, you're watching like to the right of the screen, and then all of a sudden Tory Krug comes flying in. And I think the fact that he didn't have his helmet on
made it
all the
cooler.
Better. And that was,
well, David Pastrnak said he just got a good haircut.
I don't know. Just glad I got a haircut a few days ago.
They wanted to show it off. He looked good. And he's a little guy, and we talked about how, you know, defensively, not his strong suit. We were talking about that a lot last week. But that was the hit of not only the game, but of the entire playoffs. That was awesome. And it sums it up, too, because, you know, when you saw it in real time, you didn't realize what happened to Krug before and what pissed him off
so much.
It
was at the other end of the ice.
Yes.
And now, where we were watching, we could see it.
Yeah.
We could see what was going on.
On TV, you're like, whoa,
he's mad. I know, they're following the puck, and I understand that. We could see Krug was having a hard time getting away from Perron, and Perron was kind of giving him the business in front of the net. But, boy, when Krug got wound up.
What a monster game. And, by the way, over 25 minutes on ice for Krug, because they had so many power play opportunities.
Right.
St. Louis committed so many penalties. Some of them...
I didn't think they committed all of the penalties.
I don't think so either.
Called,
like,
but,
what are we doing? It's the cup final, and I guess they're being consistent.
I also didn't think Krejci committed what was, you know, called his illegal check to the head.
But. I don't think it really benefited either team to the degree that, you know, it was the calls were lopsided. It was just kind of more ticky-tack stuff. And you would think that they'd maybe let that go a little bit. And going into this round, they were saying that, you know, Boston, St. Louis, 2 of the more under-penalized teams in the playoffs. And then it was just nonstop guys going to the box.
We can go back to earlier in the playoffs and the Brad Marchand rabbit punch to the back of the head of a player. And and it got a lot of reaction across the country because he's Brad Marchand. I saw Jordan Binnington look over his shoulder and then square up an elbow straight to the face of David Backes. Crickets.
Nothing. Nothing there. Yeah, Backes is just a target, really, is what it seems like. How about Edmondson, who, by the way, he becomes the villain, right? Like, they have a few guys.
Well, if you want to throw Perron on
there, Perron could be. But I think more so, anytime you see somebody cross-check somebody who's on the ground like that, after he already cross-checked him in the face and he thought he was flopping, like, that was ridiculous.
I think what Edmondson was upset about was that he thought Backes sold the call a little bit.
He cross-checked him in the mouth. What do you want him to do?
I was a long ways away.
Okay. And, well, no, but they zoomed in on the replay.
Yeah, but and I didn't have monitors where I was either.
No, I'm just saying they hit him in the face, and then he went down. Is Backes a flopper? David Backes flop very often?
But he also, you know, he knows how close he is to winning the cup.
I know, but he hit him in the mouth, and then he was mad about it, so then he does it again to him while he's on the ground. Like, that was just the cheapest stuff in the world, and I think that's when, you know, the crowd was getting on him, and that's good. Sometimes you don't know who the villain's going to be until the game starts, and I think Edmondson has sort of put himself as the number one target right now.
It's a fact of the game, in any sport really, but a fact of the game that there are many times when numbers don't tell the story. Numbers will tell you that Marcus Johansson didn't have a point in last night's game. My eyes told me he was the best player on the ice for either team.
Yeah, he was great. That line, really, the third and fourth line is what carried him last night. You know, the fourth line was able to score, but the third line just looked like they were on the brink of it. Whereas the first and second line just kind of didn't have it last night and ultimately didn't matter. But yeah, between Johansson and Coyle, those guys look good. And you could see them, say, tomorrow night breaking through.
And so smart. He does a lot of under-the-radar things, you know, little nuanced types of plays that don't necessarily, again, show up on the score sheet, but the players certainly appreciate it. That was the key here, was the Bruins' third and fourth lines completely outplayed the Blues' third and fourth lines, because the Bruins' top line really didn't give them anything. And the second line, Jake DeBrusk was curiously quiet again for me. After the breakaway in the first period, where, you know, he got hit pretty good. I mean, he went banging into those backboards pretty hard. I don't know if he got shaken up on the play, but that second line didn't give me what I was looking for either.
No, it didn't. And you know they're going to have that. When they're out there with Backes, they're not going to have the most, you know, potent offensive threat out there. They're just not going to. But usually they give you a little something more. Krejci's obviously had a really good season and postseason. Last night, though, those guys were very quiet. Although, you know, they end up scoring four goals. I know one of them was an empty netter, but they hit a few posts, including Marchand, who clearly confused Binnington on that one play. He didn't see it at all. And then to Binnington's credit, he made a handful of really good saves. So, I mean, they were knocking on the door of like a 5-6 goal performance. I mean, they were right there. And if they don't have such a slow start in the first period, maybe they do. Like, you got to be feeling really good after this game for the Bruins.
Well, the Bruins, and they're kind of back into the rhythm now. Once they got their rust knocked off, now it's an every other night thing until you get the series moves to St. Louis. They build an extra day of rest in there. When the series moves back to Boston for game 5, they build an extra day in there for travel day. But I think the Bruins kind of like the every other day schedule anyway, and they get back into it with the game tomorrow night.
Anything with Chara taking that slap shot to the wrist?
Yes. Yeah, the puck is 2 to 4 weeks, they say.
The puck's in trouble.
Chara's fine. The puck is probably got to 4 weeks.
That would probably break a normal human's wrist, right?
He's just, I'm telling you, he is not a normal human.
It was like the one spot where he had no pads on, too. It was like the one spot he has
his gloves on. He's got those real short gloves.
Yeah.
He wears the gloves with the short cuffs anyway. It was funny because, you know, we obviously showed it on the post-game show last night.
Right.
And you could see that it was gushing pretty good.
He had a good amount of blood.
So this morning on Channel 5, when I was watching the news, when they showed him coming off the ice, they digitized over it so you couldn't see the blood.
Why would they do that?
I mean,
they can't show blood now?
Maybe what's Channel 5 get a little queasy. I don't know.
I mean, I guess they're protecting everybody too early in the morning for the blood. Maybe like late at night you show the blood?
As soon as you see Chara standing in front of his stall after the game, as he said, no, I just needed a few stitches. I'm fine. And he's fine.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess. But he's taken a few pucks so far this playoff run. Obviously, he takes up a lot of space on the ice, but he's been getting drilled.
He and Charlie McAvoy drew the Tarasenko, Jaden Schenn. We thought that would be, you know, kind of the matchup that that Bruce Cassidy would prefer. And they were on for the two goals against that top line scored
well,
early Pasternak on. And
you're assisted
thinking,
in one of them.
Assisted a lot.
He assisted in that second goal for sure.
Not what you were looking for.
No.
I heard the discussion this morning a little bit about, you know, was it Pasternak's fault? Was it Chara's fault? Was totally Pasternak's fault.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, because the way on the broadcast they made it sound like Chara wasn't in the right spot or he was late getting back. But that was one where I just don't think he anticipated Pasternak doing that.
Neither did
anyone
else.
Nobody did. He just kind of dropped it off. And that's going to be one where if you're a goalie, like, you can't really say anything, but you're like, come on, are you serious? Like, you just put him in the worst spot imaginable. Like, Tuukka didn't even know the puck was turned over. The next thing you know, it's in the back of the net. You're like, all right.
And all Sean Corrali does is score big goals. You go back to the Winter Classic on January 1st, and he gets the big goal against the Blackhawks at Notre Dame. He gets the game-winning goal last night. The fourth line was a force all night long.
They were great.
And it's why Bruce Cassidy starts them. He's done that a lot this year, and I know people are kind of, you know, climbing on board a little late, and that's fine. He starts them a lot. He likes the energy boost. He likes what they bring. He's used them as his starting line more often than not, really, this whole second half.
Well, and there's been a lot of comparisons, obviously, to the 2011 Cup team. And we all loved Campbell, Thornton, Paille. We all loved them. This line is much better. Like, this line...
Campbell, Thornton, Paille in the building again.
They were. I understand. That was a good call,
NBC
right?
NBC didn't show it.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see it.
So, in the building...
Why not? Not enough star power
there? The fan banner captains, they had eight of them.
Yeah, there's a whole mess of guys.
Which was totally different, and they hadn't done it this way before.
Seidenberg, right?
Eight guys back who had been part of the 2011 Cup-winning team, and Andrew Ferentz, and Sean Thornton, and Michael Ryder, and Daniel Paille, Gregory Campbell, Rich Peverly.
Yeah.
It was a big group, and the fans loved it.
No, that was a good call, because we were running out of guys that could do that, so that was a good call for it. But that line was good, and they could obviously, those guys could kill penalties, those guys were tough. But the ability to score and create chances, this line is better. And whatever combination you want. Then we know Wagner's hurt. Corrali was actually hurt at the beginning of the playoffs. Achari's missed time. But these three guys that are in there right now, that's as good of a fourth line as you're going to find.
So the Bruins have had that ability all season long, that next man up mentality that they've brought to the table here. And, you know, even as you point out, Wagner goes out, somebody else steps in. When we talk about the rust factor in Chara's case as well, not only did he have the 11 days off, like everybody else, 10 days off, he also didn't play game four. So his gap between games was even longer, which again, you know, you're 42 years old. Maybe that's not a bad thing.
No. Now, do you think the scrimmage had any impact, good, bad, or indifferent?
No,
it kind of didn't, right?
It was just to break things up, do something different. Get a different feel.
Get some money for the Bruins Foundation. You know, all those kind of things.
All of that.
It's just kind of what it did. Yeah, I mean, that was just, they had to do something. You know, there were so many days off in between. Like, I had no problem with it, but I don't know if it helps or hurts or anything like that. You know, was the ice an issue? Did they talk about the ice at all last night? Because I know in the earlier rounds, that was a big complaint.
Yeah, I mean, it looked a little rough in places. Now, I'm not hearing the telecast because I'm up on the ninth floor last night. So I didn't hear what they were saying about it. It looked a little rough. But, you know, it's also, you had an 86-degree day earlier this week.
Right.
It was a beautiful day yesterday.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a little warm. But I know they've got big dehumidifier units in the building and all that stuff.
They're doing whatever they can.
As I said, we have a very special guest in the studio and the guy who brought it. That sounds awful, Mike. I'm sorry.
On. Oh, hey, that's the way it is. I mean, Stanley's the rock star. I'm just the guy that accompanies it.
Mike Bold from the NHL is here.
Hockey Hall of Fame, actually.
Hockey Hall of Fame, I apologize. When you bring this anywhere, as you said, it's a rock star. I saw the reaction just in this building. I said, we got friends I didn't know we had. It's like that everywhere, isn't it?
Everywhere we go. I mean, here we are in a radio station. You guys have probably a lot of different sports stars coming through here all the time. And remember, we had the Cup on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and I think it was our third time there, and Jay came up to me and goes, this is unbelievable. We have the biggest stars in the world coming here, and I've never seen this many people come out of the woodwork. And to see their reaction is unbelievable. Just the other day, we were at the Indy 500, and we did a quick little thing with Matt Damon, who's obviously a big Bruins fan, and just seeing Matt's reaction.
I saw him ask it, can I touch it?
Yeah. And he was just in awe. Like, when he came around the corner, it was like, holy, And, you know, just seeing the reaction, he was starstruck kind of by it. And that was really, it's always cool to see celebrities like that with a cup.
What is the etiquette? You can touch it unless you're a player or you can't touch it. What's the deal?
I mean, I think it's more you guys with the superstitions and everything like that. I mean, look, the Bruins and the St. Louis Blues, do they want to be around it? No, they want to wait till they get to win it and hoist it. You know, you get fans that say, I'm not going to touch it. And then you get fans that do touch it. And, you know, it's just kind of, I guess, the fun superstitions of it. But the biggest rule is you got to earn the right to hoist it. So that's kind of reserved for the players and everything like that. And we probably have the most fan-friendly trophy in all of sports where you can come up, put your arm around it, you can give it a kiss and stuff like that. You might be fortunate enough to be at a player's party and you might get to have a drink out of it.
The other trophies are terrible. Like, yeah, I mean, we don't need to, you know, tell you that. I think you know. The World Series one looks like you could kill somebody with it. The Super Bowl one's kind of boring. This is far and away. There's no, I don't even know what the second best trophy would be.
You know, I saw the BorgWarner trophy at the NEA 500 with all the faces of the race car drivers. That's a pretty cool trophy. I mean, the Jarrett Jug, I guess, with golf is probably pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
I've never seen it up close, but, you know, any championship trophy is obviously awesome because you won it, but yeah, there's nothing like the Stanley Cup. It's the oldest trophy in professional sports, 127 years old. You get to have your name on it. It's enshrined on there for basically your lifetime before the band maybe retired to the Hall of Fame in Toronto. Again, like you said, yeah, you can't drink out of the other trophies or eat out of them.
That's right.
And you don't get to take the other ones home, too. I mean, this goes all over the world, right? Yeah. I mean, Chara's had it over in Slovakia and stuff like that. And, you know, in any given summer, we're literally around the world.
When Ray Bourque brought it back to Boston after winning it finally with the Colorado Avalanche, and I was with him, and we were going to take a picture, and I'm standing next to him, and Ray looks at me, he says, Dale, you can touch it. It's like, because I didn't care. Yeah. It's like, you know, I'd keep your hands away. But he just looked at me, he said, Dale, you can touch it. It's okay.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, some people are like, you know, you look at the Vince Lombardi or the World Series, if it's out in the public, you know, they don't let you touch it, and you know, be honest with you, the Stanley Cup's priceless. It's worth a lot more than any of those trophies put together.
How many swimming pools has it been in?
Well, we don't like that. I mean, it does happen. Ideal, I mean, as I try and explain it to you, how'd you like to me to go out and key your car? I don't care if you drive a Beater or a Bentley. You're not going to like it. And chlorine and salt water are really bad for it.
Oh, that's not good.
Right. So, I mean, it's a respect thing. Most guys are really good. But, yeah, sometimes common sense goes out the window with a few adult beverages. But
speaking of adult beverages, how many beers can fit into it?
You want to take a guess?
Yes, I do let him take a guess. I will say a 12-pack.
Dale?
I would say more. I'd say 20.
Price is right. You win. It's 14.
14? Okay. 14 beers. Yeah. Ross, you run out, grab us 14 beers, and I don't care what kind it
run
is.
Run out. I already have
them. You got to bring them in here.
It really won't matter at all that what kind good. If you're drinking
no,
out
that's
of that
pretty thing. Good. That's a good guess.
Now, that being said, you put 14 beers in and try and drink out of it, but six of them end up on the floor.
I was going to say,
yeah, and as a Canadian boy, that's just alcohol abuse, in my opinion. So,
what's the most exotic place you've been with it?
I don't know if they call it exotic, but the most unusual would definitely be Afghanistan, going over to visit the troops. We've been over there on three different occasions, 07, 08, and in 2010. And it was an amazing experience. It's hard to put into words what we saw and did over there to be in the middle of a war zone. I remember our first year, we were under attack. After only being there for a few hours, not sure what we got ourselves into, but again, one of the generals told us it was one of the best morale experiences he's ever seen in the military. We went over there with some former NHL players and you know, played ball hockey against the U.S. and Canadian troops, and we had the cup out there on the base and everything like that. And then maybe one of the most my favorite spots is Slovenia with Anže Kopitar, just a beautiful country, great people. It's a hockey country that's building. You talk about Chara's country, Slovakia, which is awesome, too, and it's a huge hockey country, and there's a lot. His hometown, there's the Cup's been there a lot because Gabrick and Marian Hossa are also from that town. They actually all live on the same street, and so the Cup's been there a lot. And, you know, the Bahamas, we went down there years ago and shot a commercial down there. To be in the Caribbean with the Cup was pretty cool. And then one of the most unusual things we've done, we actually got to bring the Stanley Cup on the space shuttle on two different occasions. Once in 04 with the general manager of Tampa Bay Lightning. And I remember after that tour, the aerospace scientist told us that we saw more than 1% of NASA employees have ever seen. So 99% of NASA doesn't get anywhere near the space shuttle, but we got to go on it. And that's because of the Stanley Cup. It opens up a lot of doors. And in 2011, we brought it back to Kennedy Space Center because Jeremy Jacobs' company, Delaware North, runs the visitor center. And they were getting one of the retired shuttles. And they got an invite to bring the cup on the shuttle before they stripped it and sealed it. And we had the cup in the flight deck of the space shuttle. That was, I won't lie, that was pretty sick.
We can't thank you enough for bringing it in. I have a feeling, as I said, there's going to be a few pictures taken here over the next few minutes. But it's great to see you. Thanks.
Great to see you guys. Thanks for having us.
Mike Bolt for joining us from the Hockey Hall of Fame. And the Stanley Cup is in the house. We'll get to your calls and talk about last night's game one of the Stanley Cup Final after we hit trend.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Big now. (617) 779-7937 is the telephone number. It's been a parade in here. Like I said,
few people.
All of a sudden we have friends. We don't normally have friends. But it was nice. Everybody, and they're going to move it into the conference room and let other folks in the building get their picture with
it. It was very nice.
You become like a little kid with it, don't you?
Yeah, because you see it all the time on TV or whatever else, and you've seen all the players celebrating with it. And that's what's so cool, too, is all the other trophies, one of the other reasons why they're so bad is they just mass produce them. You know, so you're just like, all right, here's the identical trophy that you guys have. And, like, it's impressive when the Patriots are walking around and they have so many of them, and they're like, hey, look at all these. Like, that's obviously really cool. But it's just different. Like, so when Alexander Ovechkin had his drunken offseason where he was everywhere, like, he had that same cup with him. And, like, when Chara in 2011 was celebrating, he had that one. Right? It's not like a duplicate of it. Like, that's the coolest thing about it.
Mike was just telling us the story. People around here remember the iconic photo of Chara gets the cup, and he's so joyful, and he hoists it over his head, and it knocks his hat off his head.
Right.
What we don't know is that he opened himself up.
He cut himself. He got color.
Yeah. The cup, like, opened him up on his forehead.
Pretty good.
And, you know, he didn't give a damn.
No, didn't care. Stitches are second nature to Chara at this point, so he could care less. But, no, cool having the cup around.
Did you guys touch it?
No.
I touched the bottom of it a little bit, yeah.
I did not.
Did you really?
Yeah, no big deal.
Are you guys serious?
I'm too superstitious.
What am I going to try to win it, Rossi? What are you talking about?
Yeah,
it's superstitious if you're a player and you're trying to win it. I can't skate.
You're very important to the series.
I don't know how to skate.
Neither do I.
I would be useless. I can't help you there. No, it's cool. Because I've taken a picture with it before, and I purposely didn't touch it then. But I thought I wasn't allowed to. So I'm like, I'm not going to touch it. I want to be that guy. But they were like, yeah, you can do whatever you want with it.
He said you could kiss it.
We also could put 14 beers in it.
I really want to do that.
How awesome would that be? Just chugging
Shime
beers.
It's not out of the building yet, so. Yeah.
Chase it back down. 14 beers. I probably got some in my car. Let's go.
No, we're looking for full beers.
No, I don't. What? No, listen.
Hey.
In the car. What are you?
We're fine.
What are you, nuts? No, we can go down. Actually, that liquor store is gone. The one that used to be super close to here. That's a shame.
Yeah, it's when you moved buildings.
Yeah, well, I put
you
them out of business.
They said, okay, we're out now.
Yeah, forget it.
I would guess that Bruins fans probably were fairly confident going into the series.
Yes, of course you
and
should be.
Coming out of game one, I'm guessing Bruins fans are at least as, if not more confident.
Even more confident. Now, I will say, and this is fairly obvious, but the way the game began, you realize that, okay, this is a much better team than Carolina. And not to always, you know, rip Carolina for being in over their heads. They made it to the conference finals, so you got to sort of tip your cap to them. But the Blues have more skill. And, like, just the way they were passing and the way they were even attacking a little bit early. I know they went that long drought without any shots. But even early, he said, you know what, this is a deeper team than Carolina. Their high-end skill is better than Carolina's, and their goalie is better than Carolina's. Now, it doesn't mean it won't be the same result. It just means the Bruins are going to have to play a little bit better in order to do it.
I think that they probably feel that their job is, their task is in front of them, but I think they feel pretty good about themselves, as they should. Now the question is, what will St. Louis's pushback factor be? In the first game of the Western Conference Final, St. Louis got slapped around by San Jose pretty good.
Yeah.
And they bounced back in a big way.
Right.
What does Craig Berube do to adjust for game two tomorrow night here at the Garden?
See, I honestly think they're kind of screwed, and I'll tell you why. Because the Bruins went 1-for-5 on the power play. Their top line was no good. And Tuukka Rask, it's not like he played great. He certainly didn't play poorly, But all of those
things.
He was fine. Like, that was sort of the definition of fine.
As he said, I really didn't have much to do after the first period.
But Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak did not play particularly well. David Krejci didn't play particularly well. And they only scored one goal on the power play. And even that was just an awesome individual effort by Charlie McAvoy. That wasn't like a whole like setup, score, design something. That was McAvoy, I'm just going to skate over here and then drill a shot and score. That was all him. So, and, that whole thing about the whole layoff thing, like, that's not going to last all series long. That's going to be maybe the first period. That's what we saw there. So I don't really know what St. Louis does to draw it up because, to your point, when they came back in those other series, they weren't playing a team as good as Boston.
Exactly.
So
you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
When they've had these comebacks, it's been against opponents who are not as complete as this Bruins team is so far.
No, definitely not. Now, they were, what was it? They were down 3-2 against Dallas, and they were down 2-1 to San Jose. They jumped out to a lead in the first round over Winnipeg, so they didn't face any real adversity there. But against Dallas and against San Jose, they fought back. And again, San Jose completely banged up. That was a team that their roster.
By the end.
By the end of it. So, yeah, you're down 2-1, but all of a sudden, Carlson's skating around. He looks terrible. Then he's out, and Pavelski and Hurdle. This is different. The Bruins are pretty damn healthy. They obviously have home ice, even if it's going to come to that. And it was actually, it's going to be pretty demoralizing, too, because you're up 2-0. And they showed the stat last night. St. Louis, this postseason, 10-3 when they score first. And then forget about scoring the first two goals. That was just if you're up 1-0, they were 10-3. And then they ended up losing that game. So that's certainly not they're not very familiar with that.
All right, let's get to the calls with you guys at 617-779-7937. Mike's in Wakefield. Hey, Mike.
Gentlemen.
What's up, Mike?
What a game last night. I mean, if you gave me 15 minutes on the air, it wouldn't be enough time for me to talk about how much I love that game. Highlighted by my man, the hero last night in my mind, Tory effing Krug. I mean, does Robert Thomas even know what planet he's on right now? Anybody check in on that guy and make sure he's okay? Seriously. At the beginning of the game,
he was fine. It was a good hit.
It was an awesome hit. It was an awesome hit. Krug's 160 pounds, so he'll be fine.
All right. Seriously. But football photo-wise, man, it was beautiful. Really, it was something great to see. And it really set the tone last night. It showed that the Bruins weren't playing. I think that Edmondson really screwed things up by trying to play the bully. And when you try to bully the Bruins, you're gonna get bullied hard or back. But I was concerned at the beginning of the game because they looked really rusty. It kind of looked like they weren't just chasing the puck, but they were chasing the game itself. But then when they started going on the penalty kill, it's almost as if they're better 4-on-5 than they are 5-on-4. I mean, just the way that Butchie's got things designed, the way that they swarm the puck on the penalty kill really impresses me. And I'm not playing hero ball off the first game. I still think it's going to go 7. I think St. Louis is going to have an answer. Not game 2, but definitely game 3 when they bring it back there. I feel like it's going to be a great series. I'm glad that this is what we signed up for this year. So,
yeah, thanks, thanks, Mike. I don't see it going 7. I really don't. And I understand, the Celtics looked really good against the Bucks in game 1, and then it was a completely different story. So I know game to game, but the Bruins have won 8 straight playoff games right now, and they're not reliant on one line like they were a year ago. So St. Louis, fine, they're a good team. They're better than Carolina. I don't know if they're better than Columbus. I don't think they're better than Toronto, but I just don't see the Bruins losing even 3 times to this team. Certainly not 4, but I don't see a game 7 or even a game 6 in this series.
Mark's in Medford. Hey, Mark.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Mark.
No, I'm not going to complain about the officiating last night at all because the Bruins did get 5 power plays.
Right.
But I got a question for you, Dale. Maybe you can answer this. Explain to me why Edmondson didn't get at least another 2 for unsportsmanlike conduct hitting Backus when he was down.
It wasn't that big a deal, to be honest with you.
No, I understand that, but it's just a principle.
Nah,
okay.
I don't want ticky-tack principles.
I was
going to
say, I thought it was 2 ticky-tack to begin
with.
That would have been worse.
But I think if that was Marchand, he would have got another 2.
I doubt it.
I don't know if he would have.
Not in that situation. It wasn't that big a deal.
All right. Well, speaking of Marchand, I know goaltenders don't get called for a lot of penalties.
No, they don't.
Binnington last night, Marchand's going around the net without the puck, Binnington sticks his stick in his stomach. Now, I don't know about you, but that's hooking. That's interference. The guy doesn't even have the puck. And it got to the point where that the puck got stuck in his stomach and Marchand took it with him. And then at the end of the play, Marchand went over to him and gave him a little bump after. But you got to call those. I mean, you can hurt somebody.
I had more of a problem with the fact that on the play that you're talking about, Binnington lost his stick in his glove. Now, if you lose your mask, they have to stop play immediately.
Yeah,
that's the rules of the game,
right.
And it should be. You can't have the goalie standing there. But I didn't think you had to stop it for losing your glove. Heck, if I'm a goalie, I'm just throwing the glove off every time it gets around my neck.
Yeah, no, I didn't think that you had to do that, too. And actually, going back to the McAvoy goal, it was the sequence right before that. He lost his stick again. Binnington didn't have his stick, and you were wondering, there's a little bit of chaos in front of the net. They weren't able to score. Puck went out of the zone. Binnington was able to retrieve his stick, and then it didn't matter because then McAvoy goes down there and scores anyway. But, yeah, Binnington, a little aggressive. Kind of remember how Tim Thomas was? He'd chop you with the stick and stuff like that. He elbowed Backes in the face.
Well, that's
physical
the call.
Marchand.
That's the call I wanted to see them
that
make.
One more so than Marchand's. That, I mean, Marchand's one was kind of like, okay.
The elbow to the face of Backes, and you could clearly see when they had the close-up of the scrum, he kind of looks over his shoulder,
yeah,
and he sees who it is and where he is.
Lined him up.
And he just gives him the elbow straight to the face, a guy who's had concussion issues.
Mm-hmm.
And remember now, the San Jose Sharks claimed that the St. Louis Blues took out some of their players over the course of that series. Now, not the goaltender, for crying out
Bounty
loud.
Gate 2.0 is what they're saying.
Yeah,
they're
Greg Williams. Not, yeah. Jordan Binnington is out there taking guys out.
He's the dirtiest player in the league.
But you've got David Backes on his hands and knees in the crease after the play is dead. And Binnington looks and lines him up and gives him the elbow square in the middle of the face.
Kind of sad, but Backes' role right now basically is try to find a way to goat them into penalties. Like, that might be the way to go. And I'm not saying he flopped on that one before, but if you're committing penalties against Backes, you're playing right into the Bruins' hands.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. By the way, we will talk more about Game 1 with former Bruins star Mark Savard. He's going to join us at 11:30. We'll get an opportunity to talk with him. Coverage of the Bruins and Stanley Cup Finals on WEEI is brought to you by your New England Toyota dealers and Atlantic Power Cleaning because, I mean, after all, the Stanley Cup was in the house.
Sure
it's still in the house somewhere. There's probably a line.
Yeah, wherever the swarm of people are, that's where it is.
You'll be able to find them. We'll get back to the calls with you in just a couple of minutes. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio,
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
BEI. (617) 779-7937 is the telephone number. As we said, Mark Savard will join us at 11:30. We'll talk about Stanley Cup Final Game 1. We've got a couple of other things we're going to touch on throughout the course of the program as well. It looks ominous as far as a continuing career for Dustin Pedroia, and that press conference seemed oof. We'll talk about that.
Right.
We'll talk about the passing of Bill Buckner at the far too young age of 69. I heard Jerry talking about it this morning, and I kind of agree with him that the rancor directed at Buckner was really overplayed by the media in this town.
Yeah, I would say so. That really took on a whole life of its own. But yeah, we'll get into that. I definitely have some thoughts on how he was sort of perceived over the last several decades.
The Ben Watson suspension kind of came out at me out of nowhere. But according to Watson, the Patriots knew about it. They knew before they signed him, they knew it was coming. He didn't exactly. I'll give Watson credit in this regard. He didn't give one of those.
I don't even know
how that got into my system.
No, a million to one. I don't know. You can't trust anybody. How'd this happen? No, he told you how it happened. And so whether you choose to believe him or not or whatever is fine. But we always look the other way when it comes to guys in football. But you're looking at that position. As far as on the field is concerned, you're thinking he might be one of your better options at tight end. And now, at least for the first 4 weeks, you're going to have to go in some other direction.
So all of those things we will get to throughout the course of the program as well. Obviously, starting Stanley Cup Final, and the Bruins now 3 wins away from a championship. Real quickly, and Jason, I'm throwing this at you out of the blue. Do we have the Torey Krug cut that we discussed earlier today? Torey Krug, and Media Day, by the way, was Sunday, and I was there.
Yeah, how was Media Day?
It was crazy. I mean,
saw some of the...
It's not like the Super Bowl Media Day, no.
But it was pretty good, right? I mean, there was a lot of people packed. Out. Yeah, people were out and about and getting a chance to talk to some of these guys, so that was pretty good.
And it was, big crowds at the podiums you'd expect. Brad Marchand's
of course.
Podium, Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara's. But I will say the NHL has come miles and miles as far as presentation is concerned and how they do this. But there was a cut from Krug that jumped out at me from Sunday. We talked about this on Friday, kind of 10 reasons I gave why I thought the Bruins were going to win the Stanley Cup.
Right.
And one of them had to do with the Boston trifecta.
Not the slam.
Well, no, unfortunately, that was not an option for us.
Thanks, Kyrie.
And it kind of got mocked over the weekend. That's fine. But then I heard Torey Krug speak about it.
Well, I think it's important because, we don't want to be the group that's left behind. You want to stay relevant in your own city, and when other teams are winning championships, you don't want to be the team sitting there wiggling your thumbs wondering what's going on. So you want to keep pushing the pace, and the excellence between, teams, it pushes you forward and it drives the next group forward to stay relevant in the city. So that's what we're trying to do.
At least one player thought.
I would say he's obviously aware of it.
In the town was
that might be the next T-shirt. Bruins hockey: you don't want to be the Celtics.
That'd
be wordy,
nice.
But that's basically what he's saying: is you don't want to be the Celtics. You don't want to let everybody else down. You want to win. And it's funny because we've heard, I think, all of the owners talk about how the other teams kind of motivate them to stay good, and like, hey, if you want to be relevant, winning your division doesn't mean anything in Boston. So you need to win the whole thing. They've talked about that, and now you're hearing the players talk about it. And that's just...
Other players have told me...
Yeah, it's important.
They really want to keep this thing going.
Specifically this year.
Now, they want to win because they want to win.
Right, all the time.
I mean, that don't get me wrong. It is not the single most important thing on their mind is, right. We got to keep the... But it matters to them.
Yeah, you're going to have 3 teams in less than... 10 months or whatever it would be?
It's ridiculous. It's just, it's weird.
I mean, they've won so much that it's obviously been crazy. But now you're at the point where you're just winning multiple titles in a single year. It's ridiculous. Now here they are, 3 games away. Those guys, they know about it. So when you look back in history, you're like, oh yeah, the 2018/19 year that was in Boston sports, you had the 3 best team. 3 out of the 4 sports, you had the best team. That's unbelievable.
It shouldn't possible. Well, it hasn't happened since 1935.
Right.
So it's really hard.
It's just, it's really difficult. Because first of all, you got to find all the cities that even have 4 teams, right? So that narrows it down. And then to be able to win in all the sports, like, they're all so different. You have a salary cap league. You have a league without a cap. You have, leagues that are really trying to rely on parity, and yet still... These 3 teams look like they're going to be all finished on top.
We mentioned about the official stopping play when Binnington lost his glove last night. And the mask, I understand.
Yeah.
Gets knocked off. You got to blow the whistle, stop play. But a texter brings up a great point. Earlier this season, Tuukka Rask lost a skate blade. And they made play continue. And you'll remember, and I don't even remember who the opponent was. They ended up scoring, and Tuukka was all upset.
Yeah,
and
he's like,
holding
look at this.
Up the skate blade.
What do you want me to do
with
this?
No, we're not stopping the game for that, Tuukka.
Yeah, that's outrageous.
But Binnington loses a glove. We got to get these fellas out of here.
Call a halt.
Jay's in Boston. Hey, Jay.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing great.
I have a quick thing about Rask that I wanted to get to later, but Rossi and I decided the best thing to do is tell you about... Oh, sorry.
Everything all right? What happened there?
The best thing to do is tell...
That was my plan.
Sorry. No, I hit a button and then a video started playing.
Oh, okay.
My girlfriend went to the game last night. We have friends who have season tickets, and they didn't, in their imagined dreams, think that they were going to be in the Stanley Cup Finals, so they had a vacation, so they gave the son, the kid, the ticket, and my girlfriend got to go with them.
Okay.
She said when she was walking out of the game, they were walking on the stairs, and a door opened up, and Dennis Seidenberg, Chris Kelly, Andrew Ferentz, and Sean Thornton all walked out of the door.
All true.
And she was like, oh, my God.
I believe
and
it.
When, in,
in the 2011 season, Seidenberg was like her boyfriend. Like, we were like joked, like, oh, that's my new boyfriend. And she was cheating on Patrice Bergeron at the time because Bergeron was her boyfriend, and now she's back with him.
Wow.
But she got a picture with him. I just, like, she was just, like a most amazing thing. First of all,
sounds like she was on cloud 10. Yeah.
Way beyond.
And then for basically her old boyfriend to walk out of a door and take a picture with her.
I'm sure Mrs. Seidenberg, what doesn't mind?
Do you think, in all honesty, Jay would let Seidenberg sleep with his girlfriend?
I think so.
I think it's pretty clear, right?
Yeah. On the phone, he was telling me if any of them, any of them made a pass.
Any of them?
She gets a hall pass for any of them?
See, I would not. That wouldn't fly in my house. That wouldn't fly at all.
No. Is there a sports person right now, like currently playing or won a championship in the last 9,000 championships, Boston, the one that you would allow your wife to?
No.
Not even one?
Not even one.
Dale?
No.
Don't lie.
Please.
Big now, Z walks in the door.
Unless it was like Brady, and then she got pregnant with Brady's baby, and then next thing you know, everybody's, you know, bought and paid for at that point. Then maybe.
But
so not only
at that point, right? I mean, hey, we'll raise the kid for you, but you gotta throw us some money.
So let me get this straight: you don't mind if you don't want your wife to sleep with anybody, but
nobody.
If she sleeps with Brady and gets pregnant with his baby, you're okay with it?
Yeah, I think so. It's Tom Brady's kid. You wouldn't?
No, I think I'd rather just sleep with him than the kid.
No,
you sleep with him.
Indecent proposal style, right? Indecent proposal, like, listen, Tom, $10 million. I would say no. My wife would say, are you nuts? Of course we're doing this.
She'd say, we can even skip the $10 million.
No, she's not a huge Brady fan, actually. She's not. Probably Garoppolo would be a different story if that happened.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We'll talk to Mark Savard at 1130. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.